Hi, podcast friends. Would you like to help All the Answers become very, very deeply, deeply, profoundly popular? You can do two very simple things for us today to make us incredibly fancy in the eyes of the world. Would you go to where you listen to us and just click on 5 stars? Give us a 5-star review, and you're going to make us very, very popular. Apparently, people who can support our podcast by giving us ads and such can't do so or won't do so until they see that we have like 50 bazillion 5-star reviews. So go to your local place that you're listening to our podcast and give us 5 stars. You don't even have to write words with your brain and hands. You just click the 5 stars. How easy is that? Also, check out patreon.com and search All the Answers podcast. And there you can donate funds in small chunks that then will make you famous on the podcast. We have 3 different tiers of support. You can either get a shout out on the podcast regularly. You can come on the podcast. You can ask a question that where you won't have to be on the podcast, but your question gets answered on live air on the podcast, or various other gifts that we will give you for donating to us and helping us keep bringing you fantastic, sassy, irreverent, spiritually aware content. We love you. Patreon.com, All the Answers podcast. And please give us that 5-star review today. It'll take you 36 seconds. We love you. Hello, friends of the podcast. How are you doing? How's it going for you? I hope all is well and shiny and bright and deeply surrendered and aligned and in flow. Just a small request and desire I have for your soul. Hey, listen, if you're interested in getting some really deep activation, spiritual healing and alignment for yourself, getting clarity on your own spiritual path and or clearing or healing anything you need cleared or healed from your body, being, soul or spirit, join me for 3 days of star being and Christ-light healing, October 1, 2, and 3 in upstate Massachusetts, or you can join online. It's a 3-day retreat where we're gonna zap a ton of crap right on out of your system and align you with the light in a really powerful way. October 1, 2, and 3, for details, give me a little email and I will email you back with everything you need. KLRubin, R-U-B-I-N, at gmail.com. That's K as in kiss, L as in love, R-U-B-I-N, at gmail.com. Additionally, consider joining us for 2 weeks in Egypt, November 15th to the 26th. 2 weeks in Egypt, friends. We're going to go to the temples, we're going to go to the pyramids, we're going to go to the Sphinx, and we're going to be raising the vibrational field of the planet to lift the weight of the recent trauma that we've all been going through for the past year or two from the planet itself, from the collective, and from our own hearts. So this will be a ton of healing and also like rad travels on the Nile and an integration time for 2 days at a beach at the end in Egypt. Have you always wanted to go to Egypt? Well, you should go. Now's the time. Email me, klrubin at gmail.com. That's K as in kiss, L as in love, R-U-B-I-N at gmail.com. And for now, enjoy the cast of Pod.
Welcome to that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions you ask and you find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through vary. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listen, we traveling, consciousness always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magicless, fascinating. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
It is, just so everybody knows, we're punchy for different reasons probably, but it is really early in the morning for me today. I'm like, hey, it's fine. It's kind of fun. I like it. I also have a deeper voice because it's so early in the morning.
You know what's funny is whenever someone says, you're punchy or we're punchy. When anyone ever says punchy, I'm always like, if this feeling I'm having now is punchiness, I think punchy is my favorite state of being.
Oh, yeah. Like punch drunk. It's like that feeling of like, yeah, I don't know if I get, yeah.
Exactly. Oh, I love it. I want to be punchy forever.
Yeah.
I was thinking of you before I hopped on because I was thinking I had a morning where I have one of my dear friends. We have a full relationship on voice memos. So we only talk through voice memos. And I love that. And so does she. So it works really well. We got into a thing this morning where I had like a huge breakthrough about my whole life and like did a bunch of crying like 4 minutes before we hopped on. So I was like real tender and, you know, raw when we hopped on. And it would be cool to tell you about it and to talk about it with the people listening, because these connect the dots moments, right, when they happen, which I think is really connected to what you and I thought today might be about, because we don't have a guest today, that we were going to look at your, what was it again?
My weird birth story, because a couple weeks ago when I brought it up, you're like, what? That's amazing. We got to talk about this. This is so much, there's so much there.
I can't.
Like, great, let's do it.
Wait to get into that. And I think in a way, it's a very similar connect the dots-y type topic.
Yeah.
Where like, oh my God, I've had a few experiences where I realize that a thing I'm having a problem with in my present day life, I can clearly connect the dots to some origin point in childhood, cry about the origin point, and then realize I'm not so upset about the thing in present time at all.
Mm.
It wasn't about the thing in present time. It never is, right?
Right.
But when you see it that clearly, oh my God, it's not about the blibbity blue. It was about my mother, you know?
Right.
When you really believed for a long time, no, but this one is about the thing in front of me. This one has nothing to do with the past. You know that I've probably said this on here before. There's a saying in 12 step. They say when it's hysterical, it's historical. Isn't that great?
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
It's so.
You're like, this is so out of scale with what it seems like it should be. So it's connected to something that isn't in the present moment. It's connected to something
exactly. That's
buried deep in my muscular memory or whatever you want to.
And I've gotten to the place where I'm like, if it's emotional in any way, it's historical. Like, I can't.
Oh, are you saying you don't have emotions in the present?
No, I'm saying all the emotions I have to do with something that already happened.
Well, now I'm going to get tautological. That's not the right word. I don't even know which philosophical thing I'm going to bring up. But like, technically speaking, everything happened in the past.
All right.
Like that, my condescending sentence, that happened
okay,
in the past.
You win now.
Okay, fuck
that
me.
Argument.
I'm done. Don't want to be that person. I hate that person. I want him
okay,
gone.
Well, you won. You're correct. Good for you.
The man won. Go, white
guys
man.
Are winning. What a surprise in life. But that is correct. But also, this other, that doesn't change the thing I'm saying, which is the, let me talk about the actual thing that happened. And then we could be less teleological. If you could be.
I just made that word up.
I don't think you did. I think it's a word.
No, it's a word, but I don't think it means anything close to, like, even at all. I think it has to do with, like, your fingernails or something.
I want it to have to do with tea. Like, is there such a thing as being coffee-ological? Boy, that was a bad joke.
No. I hate that person, too.
Can I tell you, sidebar, yesterday I had this vision, Cassidy, where you know how when podcasts get really big and famous, that they tour, they go to places and tour, like Armchair Expert, they go to like Portland, they do a live show. Yeah, we're going to do that. By the way, that's going to happen. I saw it psychically, believe in it, feel it, because it's happening. And then I was seeing this one event where you and I come on and we're introducing each other and I'm like, this is Cassidy Brown. And everybody goes, yeah. And you're like, it's Katie Rubin. And I'm like, ah. And then I go, let's do a scene. And you go, what? We're doing the podcast. Everybody's watching. And I go, I know, let's do an improv scene. And we just bust into an improv scene and it blows their minds and they worship it.
They're like, we were here for psychic shit. And what?
And then we just do like a 10-minute scene and everybody's like, what is happening? And then we do the podcast.
And then they go, wait, was everything they ever did just an improv scene? And is Katie just a fucking brilliant performer?
Ooh, no. Deep layers.
And then we get into another teleological discussion about whether that's true anyway, because all life is improvisation.
Correct. And how can we really know anything?
We are making everything up.
We don't know if it's improv, because what is knowing?
What is knowing? I'm letting Desmond in.
Oh.
So he can join us in the background.
Let him into your heart while you're at it. Can you let him into your heart?
You know what? I probably need to do that a little more.
Yeah.
So hold on. I'm just going to take a breath. That's morning Desmond face. I don't think I've ever seen morning Desmond face.
Oh, cranky. That's a thing. I like it. I hope he's real cranky.
He's not.
Oh,
he can't even hear us. He's laughing. He can hear us.
What if every time Desmond was cranky, he growled? You're here.
Welcome, Desmond, will you do us a favor and look up the definition of teleological? I just thought I made it up, but I need to know what it actually means. And then we will proceed.
When you're ready.
When you're ready. But you're here. Do this thing. Also, I love you, and I'm letting you into my heart even more.
Just so you know, you're being let into Cassidy's heart. We just had to talk about that. I have to say, I've been eating too much sugar, and when I eat sugar, I get chipmunk face. Uh-huh. Like, all I see is cheeks. I'm just cheeks, you guys. I don't have mouth anymore or nose. I'm just, it's all
you're just storing it. Like there's some actual nuts in there right now.
For shiz. Okay, so here's the thing I was going to tell you.
Okay, back to it.
Oh, but did you find it?
Yes.
All right, go ahead.
Relating to or involving the explanation of phenomena in terms of the purpose they serve rather than of the cause of which they arise.
I just died. My soul is black and dead now.
It's vaguely in the world that I was kind of.
Can you read it one more time? Because my brain went to Jamaica when you did that.
I'm going to read this slowly for my benefit too. I'm not just doing this because you're dumb and can't understand me.
And a chipmunk.
A chipmunk definitely couldn't understand this. Relating to or involving the explanation of phenomena in terms of the purpose they serve rather than of the cause of which they arise.
Okay.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter where it came from. Exactly.
What does it do?
It was almost related because we were talking about, we were kind of getting into past and future and present. We were talking about time, right? And how everything that happened in the past. And I was like, well, teleologically speaking, it all happened in the past. And I was like, that's actually not the right use of that word.
So wait, teleologically speaking, it's all about the past. Does that relate? Does everything being in the past mean have anything to do with the purpose of?
Well, only that the function of your work that you're doing.
Oh,
like
that's good.
Is about healing a thing right now. So really, in the teleological sense, it doesn't matter from which it arose. I don't know if that's true.
So,
I think
so. Actually, Cassie, this might explain.
Wait, say well, actually, please.
Well,
Just say well, actually.
Well, actually.
Thank you.
What?
He just wanted to make sure that I'm mansplaining him properly.
That's the catchphrase for a mansplainer.
Oh, I love it. Okay, go ahead. Carry forth.
So that was the philosophical definition, the theological definition, which actually, I think, may define your use better, relating to the doctrine of design and purpose in the material world.
Relating to the doctrine of design and purpose. Design and purpose. So it's almost, we're talking about like design and purpose. That, because see, that implies a God, right? Like a
right.
Like a theology.
That's about like intelligent design or whatever. Anything that has to do with an intent, an intentional creation.
Right. Which brings me to a whole other question I have, an ontological question.
Oh, what does ontological mean?
Ontological refers, this is one I use all the time.
Good, because it's a word I kind of know, but I don't quite know.
Ontological. So ontology is like the study of the nature of being. So what does it mean to be? like what is existing through the lens of a human. So I'll give you an example of how you would use it. It'd be like, if we are talking about like who you're being in a moment, as opposed to what you're doing. So what I'm doing right now is talking to you guys, but who I'm being is kind of a teacher.
Okay.
So ontologically speaking, I'm teaching, but I don't know, emotionally speaking, I'm connecting with you.
Okay. So it's like, it's your, you might say that you, the nature of your being is your function in that context.
In that context, yes. There are other ways to use it though. So it comes up a lot in healing class where people are like learning how to create distinctions between who they're being and what they believe in. So in other words, if I go like, I'm spiritual, but then you're just a shitty person to everyone you talk to, I go, well, ontologically speaking, are you? Like, who are you being?
Right.
In your, in
not
this,
what you're
in this
saying
moment.
You're being or what you're claiming or what identity you're trying, but the actual be.
Yeah. And also you can look at ontology in terms of like, your faith is one thing. I believe in God and I want to serve it, as somebody might say, or I believe in capitalism and I want to live into it. So ontologically, what I do and who I'm being because I have that faith, like who I'm being is affected by what I believe, but they're two separate things.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Anyway, there's that.
Back to where were we?
Well, the cosmology thing that came up when you were saying what you said. Oh, when we just started talking about intelligent design versus any other kind of design?
Yes.
I have like a really deep tangent. We could go on about that, but I want to get back to the practical thing we started with. Which one do I do?
I think we go back to your story. You had a big breakthrough. Thank you for walking down Old Town Road with us.
And we'll come back to this cosmology thing later if we want to. And cosmology is like your perspective on the nature of the cosmos. So what is Earth and life and existence and God and all of it? So, okay. By the way, I just want to say, I've had so many people say to me this week, so many people, A, the people book in sessions because they heard the podcast, and B, people telling me how much they love the podcast. And I'm going, why is it not 700 new people? If all these people are so happy with what we're doing, like why, how? But I just wanted you to know that on a positive front, like 3 or 4 emails this week, just like, God, thank you. It's so good. I listen all the time. I can't get enough. And so we want to say to you guys listening, thank you for saying words to us of appreciation. We're just here in a bubble. We don't know.
We have no idea.
Maybe it's terrible.
Yeah.
Maybe it's helping nobody. But when you say words to us, it just means the world.
Yeah.
So thank you.
And also, yeah, that we are in a moment of trying to be more expansive and reach more people. So we will ask you right now, if you're one of those people who's like, God, I love this thing so much, please join our little brigade of people who are going to help just tell 10 people, and then they'll tell 10 people, and then they'll tell 10 people.
Exactly. Tell your closest friends and family. Side note, that brings me to, we do have a Patreon page now, bitches.
Is it active? Is it actually alive?
Like, by the end of this day, it will be live.
Because I already got people who are like, I'm going to sign up. I tried, and it wasn't there yet.
Me too. Really?
Yeah.
You know, my assistant was reminding me that like the way Patreon works is it's monthly, right? It's like a subscription. And then I made these tiers, which you guys can look at if you haven't seen it already. But I made these like, if you pay, you get this many cool things. And if you pay this much monthly. But I want to say to the listeners right now, if you're hearing this, that one of the main things we want to give people, or that so far we're giving, is we'll ask your shit here. You get to be heard here. You could come on if you pay a certain amount, and you could just get your questions asked if you pay a certain amount. And you yourself will be featured and important to us. And then there's merch, and then there's other stuff.
Do we have an ASMR level? We'll just call them up and talk really close to their ears.
It's gotta be something like, if they pay $6.37 a month, like a real specific number, then they get the ASMR treatment.
And then we'll just say that amount over and over, $6.37.
Oh my God, I hate it so much. I hate it. It's so interesting to me how ASMR like works. Like it.
Yeah, you're not susceptible to it. In fact, you're a little bit anti-ASMR.
What does it stand for, ASMR?
Auto-stimulated teleological...
Rectum. Nope.
Wrecked him.
Okay.
Damn near killed him. Back to your story.
So here was the realization I had. Although Desmond's going to interrupt in 1 second to tell us what ASMR is. So why don't I wait? We're never going to tell the story. It's not going to happen.
What do you got?
Autonomous sensory meridian response.
Oh, right.
The meridian response thing. That's
good.
Yeah. That's it.
Okay. Here's the revelation. I'm going to get right to it to save time. So I've had this thing about, you've been with me, Cassidy, for many years where I've had this like complicated relationship with theater and acting and the whole performing world. And I had this huge freaking breakthrough this morning about it, which is I've been like, okay, I'm going to try to do this in the shortest version of it. I've had this thing where the first version of Katie Rubin doing theater was like, I was an asshole. I was like a young asshole. I was really injured, really traumatized. I think I did everything that Katie now hates when theater people do. I did all of it. I really did. I was arrogant. I only liked you if you were super talented, and I would shun you if you weren't. And you were either in my club or out of my club. And you know, it was a gossipy shit bag. Like I just have done everything that I don't like that people do in theater. There are certain things that tend to show up as character defects in the theater world. Okay. Then I get sober. Then I go through all the 12 steps. Then I go to 1,000 years of therapy. Then I'm doing healing work and I'm changing, right? I'm becoming this new lady, but it's not easy and it takes a lot of work. And I do it because I like need to, because I'm dying. And I sort of just had to do it. It was just my path. And it's like things got better. And so I kept doing it and et cetera. So then I found myself feeling like I want to be with people that are open-hearted and loving and want to have a fun time and aren't shitty. And so I'd go do another theater job and be like, but everybody here is shitty. What do I do with that? I don't feel shitty anymore, but I'm surrounded by all this shitty. And there's so much like, and what I mean by shitty is like, I run into, I'm about to own my shit in just a second, but I'm just setting up context for it. Okay. Keep running into people that are super competitive. Everything's a comp of fucking tissue. What are you in? What are you doing? Oh, cool. You're doing that. Well, what's after that? Okay. If I hear that fucking question again, nothing, nothing's after it. I have no fucking career after this fucking play. Back off. Like that whole thing I hate. Women pitting themselves against you. Well, they look cuter. And so you're playing the frumpy role. So you're chubby. So you're less than me. Hierarchies. Hate it. Status shit. Well, I did a play at Berkeley Rep. You didn't do a play. Oh, you're working at where? Status, ego. Hate it. Okay. So there was a way that I just kind of like hit bottom with it and went, I kept telling myself over the years I'd go, all right, well, it doesn't matter if people are shitty. You don't be shitty yourself and you can't control them anyway. So like, what's your problem? Like, who cares? Let them be shitty. But then I'd feel lonely and triggered and scared and like, I don't like these people and I don't want to be here. Where are the nice people? And then I would work at Capitol Stage and be like, Michael Stevenson is the only nice person who runs a theater in the whole world. And like, everybody else is mean and petty and walled up and I can't connect with anyone. Just like, but I kept telling myself, this is your stuff. Like you're upset about something that has nothing to do with this moment. But honestly, I couldn't figure out what the fuck it was because I tried every angle and was like, eventually I just went, I don't want to be around people that are closed-hearted, not open, competing with each other, judgmental as fuck. Everybody wants to win, competitive. I can't be in this world anymore. No matter if I have to give up the other thing of it, I just couldn't hang. Okay. So this morning I was talking about this with a friend and I realized I got down to, wait a minute. I have some superiority shit around. I feel superior to all these people. I'm lumping all these shitty quote, quote theater people into one category. And I'm going, those people are shitty and I'm superior because I've done all this work and now I'm not shitty. And I'm a kind person. So I'm leaving you, shitty people. I leave you behind, but I'm superior to you.
Right.
Now, I know something about when you go to superiority, which is it's just a defensive strategy like any other. There's some vulnerability under that. So I was asking myself, well, what is the vulnerability for me? Like, what am I afraid of? Or like, what's going on? Then I realized I'm really angry that people who don't do work on themselves or people who behave in a petty manner win at the game of life. I'm real pissed off about that. Like I realized this morning how pissed I was at like, why is it a friend of mine was telling me a story about like a famous person who she met, and that famous person snubbed her until the famous person saw my friend act and then was like, oh my God, where'd you get your dress? She's British, and like was her best buddy. And my friend and I were bonding about that. And I said, why do the fucking shitty people in life win? They win a lot, right? Okay. But then I realized, so if I'm angry about shitty people winning, okay, now here was the big breakthrough. Because I've realized before, I'm angry that shitty people in life win at the game of life. Then I thought to myself, what would a therapist say? Or what would a good therapist say? If I said I'm really angry about this, they might say...
Wait, I'll tell you what that first therapist would have said that I had. Ready? I'm going to tell you what he would have said.
Oh boy, please. Silence?
Yeah, that was it. That was it. That was me doing it. Okay, go ahead.
Fuck him. I hate him.
Me too.
I hate him so much. You want to say something helpful, therapists? If you're a therapist hearing this fucking podcast, you are allowed to coach people. It doesn't all have to be like, and what do you know about that? How do you feel? Or just a fucking silent wall. You could give us suggestions.
Want to thank my therapist.
I'm about to get to the break.
For letting my therapist.
We're never going
to
get there.
Allows me to take out the trash every week. And there is some advice, but I don't. At this moment, I don't need advice from my therapist. I just need him to let me bitch because I do a really good job of not bitching to everybody except for you guys right now, my day-to-day life.
Got it.
Does he at least go like, yeah, okay. What else?
He does acknowledge that I'm speaking.
That would be nice. Anyway, back to Katie's revelation.
Well, does he empathize?
Yeah, no, he's amazing, and he's exactly what I need, and he's understanding, and he gives just the little bits of advice I need every week.
That's all we're asking for,
Desmond.
I just wanted to be the voice that, you know, I don't need a coach right now. I'm saying,
I won't speak for Cassidy, that like sometimes the tiniest little bit of feedback coaching, one blip of a coachy word is fucking enough. And if you say literally no things, Cassidy needs to push you off a cliff, and I support him.
Die in a fire. That is just, come on.
I'll kneel behind him to give you a launching pad.
Okay. But that's a very good point, and I like hearing it, Desmond, because that's so true, right? Therapy is what you need it to be. Like, you need the therapist you need.
That's the other thing.
Cassidy needs what he needs. I need what I need.
I really didn't need that guy.
That's a thing. Okay, so I realized, okay, I'm real mad that shitty people win at the game of life. If I'm trying so hard to be a decent person, like why? I'm mad about it, that people who don't try that hard, because it's fucking work. So that's me being a martyr, first of all, let's own that. And that's me being entitled, and that's me being superior. So then I said to myself, what a good therapist might say for me, if I had a good therapist for me, when do you remember when you were younger feeling like the shitty people won? When was the first time shitty people were winning in your life and you had to suck it up? I'm going to cry right now.
Like, I don't even know what it's going to be, but oof.
And I realized I was walking down my fucking hallway in my apartment, taking the trash out, as Desmond just said, literally taking the literal trash. And I realized every minute of my childhood, I felt the universe was so unjust because my mom was so mean, and we'll call her shitty for this moment, even though that's an unfair estimation because she has her history and et cetera. But just for a second, as a child, I was experiencing shitty behavior from her. And I had this seething rage all the time where I was like, you get to tell me what to do right now. I'm 6 and you get to tell me what to do. But everything you're saying is mean, and you shouldn't get to tell anyone what to do. And also she was so mean that she would just inherently win every fight with my dad. And I would go to my room and feel guilty, but I was feeling guilty because she was mean. So then I'd be guilty and mad because I knew it was not correct. She was only winning, and I only felt guilty because she did some bullshit, not because I had actually done anything wrong. I was like the perfect fucking kid trying to get the straight A's and be nice to mommy. And I was seething with rage. And I'm walking down my hall this morning going, oh my God. I cried some. And I was like, that's why I'm so mad that all the theater people, when they behave in a petty manner and they get to book the job, it's because my mom was so petty and she got to be in charge and I had no volition. And so it makes me go, well, you have volition now. I have volition now. I'm an adult now. I could actually be a decent person and be in that world and have a voice. I don't have to. What would happen is I go to a theater situation. All the petty people are being petty and controlling and they're winning at the game of life in rehearsal, let's say. And then I would just go real quiet, which was my childhood survival tactic. Go quiet when mom is evil. And it kept me alive. I mean, she was evil, you know? Now it's like, wait a minute. So I left because I don't want to have to be quiet with the evil people controlling the room. But it's like, wait a minute. I don't have to be quiet. I could actually be in a room and go like, well, what if we try it this way? Here's a different version that could be. I have volition now. Is this making any sense?
Yeah, totally.
And I know that like that sounds very obvious. Like any kind of revelation you have always sounds obvious.
You want to punch yourself. They feel so obvious sometimes, but you're like, no, but I didn't know it.
I know, but my heart. And the last thing I want to say just for the listener's sake is that it's this thing of like when the crying happens about it, that's the breakthrough is like, I could cognitively understand that at any moment in my life, but until it drops into the heart and I go, ow, tears, it doesn't, then I can't. Until the crying or the emotion, I can't have a different experience in present time of the theater shitty people. But now that I've cried about it, the next time I'm with shitty actor theater people, it can just be someone being shitty. It has nothing to do with me. Or I can go, if I'm triggered by it, I can go, wait a minute. When was the first time you felt like this? Okay, mom, and I had no power. Okay, let's get in touch with that and cry about it. And then I will feel different about this person in rehearsal being shitty.
Right.
But without the emotional processing, nothing fucking changes.
Yeah, you just have an idea, but it doesn't, you don't shift out of the space. Right. And you can react less from the injury.
Yeah, because the injury is healed when you process it emotionally.
Yeah.
And the divine light work I do just helps certain people process emotionally. It's just one doorway in.
Yeah.
It's just a way into pain.
Yeah.
That works for some people sometimes in certain moments. It's very humbling to admit how important the emotional piece is, because for so many years, the emotional piece was so painful for me that all I could do is the divine light work. And I got real like married to the superiority once again of divine light work. Whereas now I understand it's not that it's superior. It's that it's one tool. It's one thing that works for some people on some topics.
Yeah.
If you can do some journaling and get to your feelings and process them, that do that. But if you can't, try something else.
It also reminds me of the sort of, you know, we attract what we are hurting from or whatever. Because I do feel like I have a very different experience. Like I have witnessed at a couple steps distant most of that, the more toxic behavior. I've definitely, you know, witnessed plenty of the sort of slightly more like, you know, I think I've witnessed more of the insecure behavior as opposed to the really toxic, shitty behavior in most of the plays I've done. I've been overwhelmingly like, oh my God, I can't believe I had another really great experience with a great group of people, with some exceptions, you know, and like, even like all my experiences with you have been in good situations with the one, I would say our first play together, like it was awesome. Minus one big steaming chunk of difficulty.
You mean when I got sick?
Oh, I'm thinking more of one of the actors just being also just a difficult human. The one that they had to fire.
Oh, yeah.
Because he sucked. But,
right.
But he sucked because he was so not present in himself. He was injured, deeply injured person.
Yeah.
So, but my point being that like I haven't witnessed it in the same way, but I also wasn't operating from the same deep level of extreme trauma, because I actually had a different.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've also had that fucking frustration, but not necessarily in the theater world, more in the sort of greater world around me. Like, why do shitty people get to win? My revelation was always like, why is destruction easier than beauty?
Construction?
No, destruction is easier. Oh, it's better than...
No, but why easier is than destruction?
Like, it's super easy to just knock a glass off of a fucking table and it shatters. And that's how I feel about, like, you know, some, you know, drilling in the Arctic or whatever, you know, like any political action that's like, right. But you just get to do that. We're working so hard over here to be like, can we keep this tree alive? And everybody's like a billion, millions of people like gathering and like there's one tree, we're trying to keep it alive. There's so much effort. And there's one motherfucker can literally just come over and just kick that tree over and be like, ah. And you're like, why does that get to win?
Yeah.
You just got to win.
Yep.
And it's, yep. I really deeply empathize with that overall construct. And I just haven't experienced it. I've witnessed it, but I haven't experienced it in the theater. Does that make sense? Like, I know exactly what you're talking
Interesting.
About.
Interesting. Yeah.
And I've watched you go through it and I've watched other people go through it. And I've held people's hands going through it. I've, you know.
Yeah, you have. Yeah, you're good at that too. That brings up another thing I was talking to my friend about earlier this morning where I was thinking, so I would have the experience of like, here I am on a show, here's someone else being shitty. Why is Cassidy not reacting to this? Like, I would look at someone like you in the show, there'd always be some cast member who, the way I would experience it is like, they're just not bothered by this person's shittiness. And so I would come to this conclusion, either they're not bothered by it, they're just like, that has nothing to do with me. That's over there. And I couldn't figure out why I couldn't get to that. Or they don't notice it. They're like,
right,
a fucking sleep. And then that would make me mad because I'd be jealous of the asleep people. And then I'd be like, why do asleep people get to win? I'm fucking awake over here. No, shouldn't that be good?
Yeah. Is that also, I'll own up to there's the willful allowance. And it's like, well, I guess that's happening. If I just shut down to it, which I've definitely done a lot of, and like, especially in like things that are more, you know, being talked about a lot more now, thank God, but like, you know, of like, misogyny and, you know, and racial micro and macro aggressions and within the context. And I definitely have been able to look back at things and gone, I didn't say a fucking thing. I just fucking sat there and pretended it wasn't happening or thought, well, they're fine, right? And so, yeah, now that we push on that, I was like, I've witnessed it. Like I said, I've witnessed it, wasn't experiencing it. Witnessing it is also experiencing it and needs to be stepped to, I believe.
I agree. And like, that's another one that would happen is I'd go, here's this shitty theater company. I'm not going to name names, but boy, do I want to, where everybody keeps going back and taking another contract. And then they all bitch to each other about how shitty it is to work there and how unprofessional these people are. But yeah, oh, but it's a contract. And my attitude was, this place is shitty. Fuck them. I'm not working there anymore. They don't deserve to have my ass fucking present. But also, I don't need to put myself through that fucking torment,
right,
was my attitude. Now, so then I'd be like, but why is nobody else upset about this? Why is Cassidy going back and back and back to that company and just being like, oh, well, when they're treating him terribly, they're treating everyone terribly. And, you know, that also is about my mother, where it's like, I got out is kind of the narrative I have running, where it's like, I finally figured out, first I moved away, college and then grad school. Okay, so I'm far away. Then she was still with me like emotionally and I still had a relationship with her. And after 15 years of trying to get her to wake up, get me to be compassionate, find a way, go to therapy, couples therapy, parent therapy, all of it with her, without her, I realized after the last time I saw her, she's never going to change and she's never going to wake up. And I don't actually have to go there anymore. So I don't talk to her. And it fully changed my life in the best way ever. And there's a way that I apply that to toxic shit in theater where I go, I'm not going back there. I don't have to fucking go there. And I think my sensitivity is so high because my entire childhood, I was getting beat up with toxic behavior. So I'm just not going to go. I'm just not doing that again. I'm just not doing it. But I do feel envy that people have a higher tolerance for that,
sure,
than I have. And at the same time, in reality, I don't want to go through it. So I don't actually want that tolerance.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. But the resentment piece feels less, I don't feel as resentful now that I had the realization of, oh, I'm choosing to not go there because it hurts me too much. And it may not hurt you too much. It doesn't hurt you because you don't have the same history. So yeah, why would it?
Yeah, I have a higher tolerance because it doesn't hurt me. Like, yeah, you just said it.
Yeah. So anyway, all of that is still something for me to sit with regard to, like, I'm going to let that all sort of process through me and see if it changes my willingness to participate or not. But it changed the whole, I don't know how to explain it, like the whole landscape of the whole conversation changed for me after I had that cry where I went, oh my God, I had no power then. And shitty people won all day, every day. Now I do have, and that was sad. And so I guess that's the whole thing I'm trying to get at is, like, if we can get to what the grief is under the superiority, anger, resentment, judgment, whatever, there's always grief under it. Then the thing that it was above it, above the grief, diminishes. I don't feel so resentful right now at the shitty people in theater because they're just doing them. It has nothing to do. Yeah. They're just doing them. I was just like so triggered by it because of how much grief I had about how mean my mommy was. Like, she was supposed to nurture me. She was just like so mean, but I hadn't broken through and cried about that and let that grief melt out of my eyes. And I'm sure there's more, but I can already feel the shift from just that first nugget of crying into it.
Well, that does kind of lean into the sort of Enneagram childhood wound thing of, like, you being an eight and stuff, and the way that, you know, eights are, like, you know, contrary and, like, I'm going to, you know, you're going to hold yourself away from everybody else, that superiority thing and, like, all that. And that all goes back to the childhood wound, which is what a lot of the one phrase that some Enneagramists use, you know, it's like, and that goes back to that's
totally,
you know, it's a fucking cliche for a reason on that one. It's like, mommy was mean and now I'm this way.
Well, but let's be more specific, because what I've heard about the eight thing is that the eight's fear is that, or like, they're like unwilling to be annihilated again. They're afraid of an annihilation. And I cannot believe how accurate that is for me. Like, she did annihilate me, as did several abusers that annihilated me in other ways. Like, I got literally myself was shattered and fully destroyed. And so to survive, a part of the psyche goes, cool, we're never going to be shattered again. So we got this. We're tough and strong and back off, which is a defensive strategy. And then once...
Armor up.
Yeah. And then once you start to realize, like, oh, I've been also... And then I want to hear your story about the birth. But just to wrap this up, I've been seeing lately, too, another piece of this where so regularly clients who email me about time scheduling things or people just like... practical emails like the guy from Jiffy Lube, or, you know, just like emails I'm having with people. My first read of almost everything everyone says to me, if it has anything to do with money or a job or anything, is they're attacking me and telling me I've failed or done it wrong.
Ooh, yeah. Wow.
But it's very subtle and it's like a little tiny part, like, fuck you, no, I didn't. And then I have to go, hold on. He's just saying, could you come at 11, not 10? And I'm hearing, you fucked up and chose the wrong time.
Oh,
or like, you know, your email was wrong when you said, like, everybody's saying to me, you've done it wrong and you're an idiot as a result. Which, once again, that's what she did all day, every day. And my dad was pretty guilty of that, too. My dad was pretty, like, everything he did was wrong. Everything. And so he wasn't punishing about it. He was judgmental, quietly judgmental. Like, look at you being dumb. So then every moment is a defense against that.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing it come up all the time and going, wow, okay, let me reread this email. And I'll wait like 20 minutes till the energy has dissipated and reread it. And I'll be like,
nothing in this.
There is no accusation in that email. There's nothing in there.
Desmond.
I just want to jump in because we did not birth our children. So I don't really have anything to add to that. And I don't think I'm super abusive. So I don't have anything to add to that.
God, I hope not.
As a parent, I am so scared because you have to put so many limitations on your kids or the children you're living with, and just like, and you have to remind them constantly.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get tired of reminding them politely. And I'm basically just every night I go to bed and just wonder, like,
yeah,
is this going to be a future therapy session? Is he going to thank me when he's 20 for keeping him on the right path? And as a parent, you just...
How do you know? You just don't know.
You try to keep him safe. and you try to make sure that when they're out of your eyesight, they're not dicks. And sometimes those two things are harder than you think.
I mean, my theory, not being a parent either, is just the fact that you have that fucking thought when you're going to sleep is probably the difference, is a big difference. Rather than, yeah, rather than, fuck that kid, I'm so right. Like,
very true.
That's the thing. It's like, you think about it and you care. Also, like, this is a really important topic, is the difference between, like, boundaries and abuse. The difference between a strong, you know, firm hand, what's that called? Love, strong love.
Tough love.
Tough love versus abuse. And there are...
And that's a much finer line. I think tough love is often a phrase used to mask abuse.
That's right. Or like, but like boundaries or appropriately expressed frustration from a parent is different from sociopathic torment of a child. They're different. But I mean, I know it sounds funny because it's over the top, but like I've had to learn the difference and I'm still teasing all that apart. Like I still have a reaction when anyone gets intense about anything, like mom's coming for me. And it's like, no, that's appropriate aggression. I had a therapist teach me about appropriate aggression. You're supposed to be aggressive sometimes. You just are. But like in my psyche, they get the wires get crossed because all of hers was inappropriate, or let's say 80% of it. You know, and who knows, 60%, whatever the fucking percent. So, I have to learn the difference between that. But there is a difference. So I would guess, Desmond, knowing you a little bit, that you're doing a great job and you're a normal parent who's worried about not being mean to their kid, which is a great thing to worry about.
That's a really good thing to worry about.
Yeah, my parents were like narcissistic, crazy people. You're not that.
Well, and I give the exact same. It's funny, after Cassidy said it, like I give the exact same advice to Kelly. Like she's like, are we spending enough time with the boys? I'm like, just the simple fact that you're asking that question means you're probably fine. You know,
yeah,
the parent that's just like, I got shit to do too, man. Fuck you. That's the one who's not pulling their weight.
I mean, if that's your default and that's all you ever go to, I got shit to do and fuck you, then that's one thing. But I think sometimes you even healthy, loving parents have to go, I got shit to do, deal with yourself. As long as it's in balance with, okay, now I'm putting my shit aside, let's go to the park or whatever the fuck you do as a parent. That's parenting, right? That's going to the park.
I downloaded a video game yesterday specifically to play with them, so I'm awesome.
There you go. You're doing it with them. Perfect.
Huge. Make sure you take them to the park. All right, Cass.
All right, hard left. Not really, though. It's actually totally a bridge because it has to do with like what happened when we were younger and how it puts us in judgment in our adult life. Here's my proposal for this conversation. And you tell me if that doesn't sound right. I'm going to tell this story about what happened when I was born. I got way more detail from my mom, by the way. I got it right.
Ooh.
I had it slightly wrong. So I have all the details, which I'm super excited to share. And I would love to check some like theories that I have about like what I, and I also just want to hear from you how, what you think, because you said, oh, that answers so many questions about you. And I would like to hear that from you. I'd also like to hear just sort of impressions from the records on that topic. And if what I think is true about myself. Does that make sense?
Okay. We may have time.
We'll see. Let me do it. And then we'll see. All right. So this all came up. I'm going to do the now story and then go to the past story. The now story is very simply, I was on this trip with Denise and all of her friends, and there was a lot of heavy drinking going on. And this is where it's connected to what we've been talking about. All my judgment just went, whoa, like I got like,
right.
I can't be around this. This is intolerable. These people are whatever. Like I was really, but I wasn't expressing it. I was just like, I'm going to protect myself and I'm going to walk away and I'm going to be uncomfortable, but I'm not going to like,
right.
But then we were able to talk about it and I was able to say, finally be like, yeah, that fucking, that guy was like, that's ridiculous. He shouldn't be, you know, I was able to really say what I was feeling and not just, you know, what I thought was appropriate for me to have an opinion about.
Right.
Because it was a safe vessel for me to have those thoughts. And in that, we were able to kind of break through to this reminder that I was like, oh yeah, I'm scared. Like, I am afraid, A, for myself to lose control and B, for other people to lose control. What? And okay, so
okay.
Here, and that all went back to around alcohol and losing control. So wind back to college. First time I had that realization was in college. Everybody was drinking. I wasn't. I wasn't smoking weed. I wasn't drinking. And it was fear. It was definitely. And I remember like having a few moments of saying, I'm afraid to lose control. I'm afraid to lose control. Until I finally like was at my house having a party. And that was the first time I smoked weed because I was like, okay, safe place. I can lose control a little bit. Like that's how extreme it was back then.
I have questions already, but I'm just wondering, when was the first time you felt like you were afraid to lose control?
That's the first time I have a conscious knowledge of that awareness of like, why, you know, everybody's, I mean, I also was a no drink guy in high school. I was like part of youth working for youth. Providing alternative drug-free activities for the youth of Los Alamos, you know, like, and I wasn't like a goody-goody. I wasn't like but I was definitely like doing everything I could to like live in that identity of someone who wasn't driving up to Half Dome to party, not Half Dome, whatever it's called, the Dome. It was called the Dome up in the mountains, Thunderdome.
It was they Thunderdome? Were doing Thunderdome. Was it Thunderdome?
Okay. So like, that's always been a piece of my sort of DNA of my behavior. You know, once I was in college, at least I was hanging out with people who, you know, in high school, I wasn't even hanging out with people who were doing any of those things.
But see, this is the whole point about the birth story is there is a way earlier moment before college.
Yeah.
I promise. When you decided that being out of control is terrifying.
So.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, now let me just tell the details of the birth story because there's a gap in awareness between that and in high school that I don't have. You know, that's some of my probably my more like blind time, you know, where I'm just like going through the world and not being aware of what it looks like. Okay, so 1969, June 12th, 1969. Molly and Jim Brown are in the car with my godparents, who are the people who are now my godparents, in the back seat of a VW Bug, and they are driving, they're planning to drive into the city from Berkeley, right? Trying to head into San Francisco to go to dinner. Mom is whatever months pregnant, 7 weeks short of term pregnant with me, whatever that would be. I don't know the numbers right now, like 40, so 33, something like that.
Nobody cares.
But very pregnant, but, you know, a little early. And they go through a blind intersection, which means there's no stop signs in any direction. Not blind, but an unmanaged intersection, which is a weird thing that it even exists.
Okay.
And
it is
a guy who later turned out admittedly to be drunk. He admits being drunk and is also proven to be drunk.
Wow.
He reports later. He tells people what happened. He comes into the intersection as they do, sees this Bug in front of him. He's in a big fucking truck.
Oof.
He's only going like 30 when it starts because it's a regular intersection in a town. And instead of hitting the brake, he hits the gas. Accidentally hits the gas.
Accidentally?
And accelerates into my mom, who's in the backseat driver's side. My mom wakes up somewhat, you know, knocked out somewhat, and then just wants to lie down. And people are like, there's glass under you, and da-da-da-da-da. They take everybody to the hospital. My mom is everyone's fine for the most part. They're banged up, but no one has any broken bones or ruptured anything or torn anything. And so she might have a concussion or something, but she's fine. She's mostly fine. She's banged up. She immediately, though, goes into labor, but doesn't. It's not like hardcore labor. She goes into like early stages of labor almost immediately. So at like 7 at night, da-da-da-da, goes on. They get her everything stabilized. They're like, who is your actual doctor? Because you could go there to give this birth because you're giving birth, by the way. And so they transfer her over to the Oakland Kaiser, which is right near my house now, which is kind of interesting, like really close to where I live now. They transfer her over there the next morning, and the early next afternoon, she gives birth on Friday the 13th, which I love. I love Friday the 13th. I'm obsessed with the day. I think it's a great day because I lived. I was not well, though. I was unbaked. I was an unbaked ham. I didn't come into my body until. Well, this is the other part. Sorry. So I'm un, my lungs don't work. They have to put me in the incubator because there's a membrane that needs to form in the lungs, and I'm living in an incubator. I can't, there's no contact with my parents because I'm in an incubator and they can't really hold me or do anything. And
yeah,
I don't know how long that takes, but they are able to take me home eventually and I'm okay. But I didn't exist until about 7 weeks later.
What do you mean?
My mom reports that I was just a lump of, I just ate and shit and slept and didn't connect, hardly cried, maybe didn't even cry at all. Yeah.
Okay, I have it. I got it. Okay. They're telling me already.
It's all obvious to all of us.
And I mean, it's so obvious in a way that it's like...
And then I have a further question on astrology based on this conversation, whatever we have. So...
Right. What's your birth time? Is it, right?
Yeah. Is it when I dropped in?
A lot of people would argue it is.
So that's the story as it is. The guy himself, was in the hospital too, and he, tried to go over to my mom to apologize. He was wrecked. Not drunk wreck. He was just
I'm sure.
Oh my. And he admitted everything. He didn't try and get out of anything. It was just I was drunk. I almost killed you. Oh my God. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
I mean, so Cass, let me just do this as a question. Well, to me, this is so obvious. It's silly.
Yeah. Well, that's what we said earlier. So many things are obvious.
Right. Because I'm outside of your reality. It's easy to see. But the part that's not obvious that I could really understand being not sure if one could believe in would be the idea of, because you were so little, right? Because you were a consciousness barely in a body, in someone else's body, I could see a world in which, particularly someone like yourself, who's mm-hmm. tends to be more in the mind, I could see a world in which you go but I didn't even know that a drunk guy, how would I as a fetus
right.
know that a drunk guy was responsible for all this chaos and for me not getting embodied and for the terror of that? So then why in my 20s would I be uncomfortable with the chaos of drunkenness? I wouldn't even have made that association. I was a lump. I wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So I've worked with enough birth trauma now, and I'm talking about, I shouldn't say birth trauma, womb trauma, shit that goes on in the womb. I'll be in a session with someone and they'll be like, I'm angry at, grasshoppers. Why do I hate grasshoppers? And I'll be like, well, that's random. Let's find out. And then they take me, the record keepers, the divine, whatever, takes me to the womb. And we're in the womb and they're there. And a random thing happens to the body in the womb. And the body in the womb is aware of what's going on outside the body it's in. It's not, if you think about the density of your mother's body, it's not that thick. It's not like a concrete wall. You
literally have a pipeline trading information back and forth constantly. And we know that, we also know that even medically speaking, it's information, it's not just, chemicals. Those chemicals are what information is carried in. It's important that when we're breastfeeding, it makes a huge difference for both the mother and the child, because you trade things. And so, yeah, I'm very aware of that.
Yeah. And the membrane between your physical body and the whole big scary world is just this lady's fucking belly. It's her skin and a couple muscles. It's not a lot of stuff. So you almost didn't get to exist because of a drunk driver. And I would even argue you kind of died for a while. You left if life is consciousness in a physical body, you left the body and then came back 7 weeks later. So it was so traumatic to your nervous system, the body, that it went, protect this being, kick it out.
Yeah, I don't trust this. I'm going to wait and see whether this thing's a viable place to be.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but trauma did it. And the trauma of the impact, I would argue, would be the thing that's unprocessed still. So cognitively, you get that was terrifying. I'm going to skip out. That seems like a followable idea. Then you drop back in 7 weeks later. That's also traumatic. There's a trauma to and I'm incarnating. Holy fuck. That's usually that happens in the womb and it's safe and warm. And then you're birthed in the world and that's traumatic. But there's a nice doctor and they put you in a warm place and there's mom and then you're nurtured, 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 and it's not so terrible. But you had I would say you were murdered in a way. You left your body, you died, you got murdered by an outside force that happened real fast and scary to an infant baby. Terrifying. And then you boom, shot back into that same body that had gone through that trauma. So did the body get to process the scary emotional terror? I would say no. I get a no on it. So now when the people around you do chaotic drinky behavior, that gets triggered. That part that's unprocessed goes, instead of, oh, this is just a thing that's occurring.
Yeah.
Because that needs to be turned into like, I'm so sad. And then when the sad processes through, you won't have a reaction to people drinking around you so much.
Yeah. Yeah. And even the connective awareness, which was not big tears.
Yeah.
It was little tears, felt like a step in that direction. It didn't feel processed. It doesn't feel like it's fully processed, but just, yeah, like we said, like the awareness is great. And it's a first step always in that. Like, but I had never, it's funny though, to know that I hadn't even like really made that. I think I've said it in the past. I've been like, oh yeah, well, I don't drink. I almost died when I was a baby, when I was a drunk driver. So I'm really sensitive to drunk drivers. Like I've said that a lot.
Yeah.
But it has to keep coming up. So clearly I haven't actually processed it. But like even this last time where it came up, I was like, and even after I was able to like connect to that, then all that judgment that I was feeling about the everybody else's behavior,
right,
that did go away. Like that drained out. That was like, oh, that's something else.
That makes sense.
I'm still reacting though. I'm still having the reaction. I haven't processed that.
Well, it's the same as my turbulence thing, my airplane turbulence thing. That is 1,000,000% something so terrifying. There's some kind of terror somewhere in my system that hasn't moved out yet that got activated by, like, turbulence is just a stand-in for the original terror. And I believe that it has to do with, you know, the original thing I've been doing healing around forever, which is like, I don't want to, so trigger warning for the listeners. We're going to do a little scary sexual abuse talk for a second. So if you don't want to get into that, babies, sex, if you don't want to get into that, turn the podcast off. I understand. I support you. You know, when you're sexually violated as an infant, which occurred to me, to my body and my soul, it's terrifying because you're deeply terrifying. And so there have been all these layers of that terror that I've like sobbed through in healing sessions and in integrative parts work sessions and in therapy. And so I can only assume that my turbulence thing it's some piece of that I haven't met yet. That, or it's a birth trauma. That actually reads like a yes. Or a womb trauma, but it reads like birth. That's really cool. I'm glad we're talking about this. So I can do some of that work around that. Because I do know that I was pulled out with the forceps because I was choking to death. Because the fucking, what do you call it? The
umbilical cord
was
wrapped.
Was killing me. Yeah. Anyway, but that's a way, I'm just trying to bring that back to what you're saying about that. That like, I relate to carrying terror so young and so old and so deep that it's hard. It's actually hard to get connected to it because it's so young. You have to find that really young place. And everybody's different in terms of like, what are the specific contexts required? Like, what space do you need to be in and with whom in order to be able to find that and get in there and sob that through? I love you.
Thank you for that. Just, yeah, holding space for that story to come out. I mean, it's exciting and interesting story.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good story, but it's also like, yeah, it's just so strange to like sit there and go, yeah, to think of it in the terms like you just put it of that is, I've jokingly said I almost died as a baby, but you're like, no, you almost died as a baby. Like, that's like,
yeah,
for fucking real. Like, and of course that, like,
yeah.
And you know, I have no idea what the level to which that is also a trauma for my parents and the like fear that they were engaged in around that. Or fuck the dude, man. Does he know that I survived? Like, does he even know? Because they moved her to a different hospital. He didn't get to.
Right.
In his heart, maybe he killed an unborn baby. He doesn't know. Yeah. There's so much there of like the level of trauma for so many of the people is unmeasured. And there's, I don't think we've ever used the term micro trauma, but like we think about how we are just surrounded by micro traumas. And this is not a micro trauma, but it's like at every turn.
That's right.
It's amazing we're still walking, and we are.
No, it really fucking is. It really fucking is. I don't know why this makes me think of, I probably told this story on here before, but like speaking to that point of like the other people involved and the how, you know, there's also the idea of that like we absorb the pain of, you know, you could have taken on your mom's terror about it and you could have taken on, I don't get that actually for you, but I get more that like the trauma fucked with you. It fucked your body, your nervous system, your being, all that. I was in Thailand with a boyfriend who, you know, lovely, wonderful man who I miss. I miss that guy. I wish we could be friends.
Yeah.
It's one of those, though, where like I love him so much and he loves me so much that we can't be buddies. I don't think we could.
Yeah.
I thought for a long time we could, but he was the one who was like, no, bitch. And I was like, you're great. You're raw. Now I'm like, he's right. We can't be friends. Because I'd be like, what if you just spent the night once? It's just the tip. Just the tip. Put it in my mouth a little. Doesn't count. Okay. That guy and I.
Now I've got that image, but go on.
Oh, boy. We were in Thailand together. And fucking A. It was our first night in Phuket. And we had just, I believe we had just, yeah, it was our first night in the whole country. We had landed, we got to our hotel, we put our shit down, we were exhausted, we slept weird hours. It was probably like, we slept until like 4 p.m. the next day or something. Finally woke up, had some energy, had some food, got in a tuk-tuk, one of those little, you know, so how do you describe a tuk-tuk to people who maybe don't know what a tuk-tuk is? It's like a car without walls.
Yeah, and you just jump on. It's like a taxi.
Like a golf cart that's a taxi.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they drive fast as fuck and they're all over India and all over Thailand. We went about, I want to say, 2 miles from our hotel, which was fancy as fuck. And we went around. So like the way Phuket is laid out is it's there's a bay that dips into the land. So you have like a circular land that you can drive around this bay. So we go 2 miles to the tip, actually, of the circular bay.
You just went to the tip, though? You didn't go any further?
Actually, yes.
You just went to the tip. Okay, so just the tip.
We got right to the, just the tip.
Okay.
Right to the tip. We're driving in this tuk-tuk. All of us, and there's like tourists on the left and tourists on the right. And there were tourists.
You just tuk-tuk to the tip.
Tuk-tuk to the tip. We took ourselves to the tuk-tuk to the tip. Tourists on the sidewalk to our left and tourists walking in the street on our right. Just people everywhere. It's very popular, like party, get your drink on kind of area. Out of nowhere, it felt like our first moment in Thailand, a man, older gentleman, not older, but like in his 60s, stepped off of the sidewalk into our tuk-tuk. We were probably going 40 miles an hour, maybe 38, something like that. This guy stepped off the sidewalk. He's wearing flip-flops. And I remember so distinctly the sound of his skull hitting the glass windshield. It was like, if you imagine like a ball, a sphere, a dense sphere of glass being like a heavy metal, like a heavy glass thing, being thrown into a dense wall, like a glass wall, two pieces of glass hitting each other real fast and real hard. So we hit this man. He and I are in the back. The driver is like, what the fuck? I mean, we just watched him walk in front of us and just pow, this impact happened. The sound was horrifying. The tuk-tuk stops. My boyfriend and I get out of the thing and the guy's in shock and he's trying to walk away and he's holding his head like this. He's got one hand on his forehead and he goes, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm late. I got to go. I'm fine. And there's a crowd that's gathered around us because it's bad. It's not good. Finally, we sort of go, honey, you're not fine. You need to sit down. You're in shock. Have a seat. He sits down on the edge of this like thing you could sit on, like a fountain thing. And this egg starts to form on his forehead, this big sphere.
Yeah.
And I'm showing Cassidy like how it was this big.
I'm going to go with softball or grapefruit.
Softball. Like the size of a grapefruit. That's what it was. It was a big grapefruit on the front of his head. Fully huge. And then I watched the skin on the grapefruit. I know it's fucked up. Break open and start to bleed. Oh my God, it was fucking awful. We felt like in our bodies, I remember we talked about it, like we just maybe killed this guy. We were in this car that if we hadn't been in it, it wouldn't have been there. Smack, man's head hit by a fast moving vehicle. Okay, so he sits down, a group comes around him. people are taking care of him. And me and the, my boyfriend are just like stepping away, like shocked. And then we're sort of like, what do we do here? Do we stay? Do we need to stay? Should we go? An ambulance comes. And we hear the sirens of the ambulance. And you can see people like shuffling into the crowd to get the guy. And then we heard the ambulance drive away. We were standing far enough away that we couldn't see, like, did they take him? Did he die? Was he on a stretch? But we heard ambulance come, ambulance leave, and then the crowd dispersed. And so we left and we went, like, we walked and we didn't get back in a tuk-tuk. And we were like just in shock for a while. And then kind of like had to process a little of like, did we cause that? Like, and then we were like, no, we didn't cause it. It just happened. You know what I'm saying? It was complicated. Yeah. But it speaks to that thing of like, we were very affected by it for days.
Right. And you held it in your body and...
Totally. And then we had to cry a little and then we felt better. And then we didn't get back in a tuk-tuk for a while. And then every time I did, I was nervous. And then I got over it because I cried some more. Bah, 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 bah. Trauma.
Trauma.
It's for real.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to urinate and we have to, and I'm starving. And we have to
go because you have to go teach.
And I have to teach. So I'm kind of like, I think we ended here.
Let's just call it.
And I want to say, you know, just for the listener and for ourselves, it's like, I know my homework now. I know what my homework is. You know what your homework is in terms of like grieving through that original terror moment.
Yeah.
And that's how we're going to process these things so that they aren't still happening.
Yeah.
In our present day lives.
Yeah. I gotta face it somehow. I'm not sure where yet, but, and then I can go get hammered. Is that right? Am I like...
Yeah. And you can be at a big club with a lot of hammered people around you and maybe get some like children in there and get them hammered.
Yes. And breathe on each other and get COVID.
Oh, that's good. Add that in. That's good. And we're going to do some sociopathic parenting while we're there. We'll bring our own kids there. Breathe on them. Breathe on the strangers. Sex with a few of the strangers.
It's just so, it's all bad in every direction. We love you.
We love you.
People out there. Fucking take care of yourselves and take care of your traumas.
Yeah.
Also, though, like, be patient with other people's traumas, because that's the thing I'm also realizing.
Yeah.
All those shitty theater people.
Yeah.
They're dealing with their shit.
I know.
Fuck.
Traumatized. I know. And I don't get to, being superior just never helped. It doesn't help. I'd rather just find the empathy but, you know, people say, be empathetic, understand compassion. What I know about compassion is you can't find it until you have it inside yourself for yourself. Uh-huh. And it's a cliche, but it's for real.
So do your work is what we're saying.
So join us in doing your work. We're going to do our work. You do your work. I'll send you this recording right now, Desmond.
And give us a 5-star review on all the platforms.
And go to our Patreon, to All the Answers Podcast on Patreon. Join us in keeping this going. I love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.
Hello, friends of the podcast. How are you doing? How's it going for you? I hope all is well and shiny and bright and deeply surrendered and aligned and in flow. Just a small request and desire I have for your soul. Hey, listen, if you're interested in getting some really deep activation, spiritual healing and alignment for yourself, getting clarity on your own spiritual path, and or clearing or healing anything you need cleared or healed from your body, being, soul, or spirit, join me for 3 days of star being and Christ-light healing, October 1, 2, and 3, in upstate Massachusetts, or you can join online. It's a 3-day retreat where we're gonna zap a ton of crap right on out of your system and align you with the light in a really powerful way. October 1, 2, and 3. For details, give me a little email and I will email you back with everything you need. KLRubin, RUBIN, at gmail.com. That's K as in kiss, L as in love, RUBIN, at gmail.com. Additionally, consider joining us for 2 weeks in Egypt, November 15th to the 26th. 2 weeks in Egypt, friends. We're going to go to the temples. We're going to go to the pyramids. We're going to go to the Sphinx. And we're going to be raising the vibrational field of the planet to lift the weight of the recent trauma that we've all been going through for the past year or two from the planet itself, from the collective, and from our own hearts. So this will be a ton of healing and also like rad travels on the Nile and an integration time for 2 days at a beach at the end. In Egypt. Have you always wanted to go to Egypt? Well, you should go. Now's the time. Email me, klrubin@gmail.com. That's K as in kiss, L as in love, rubin@gmail.com.
What are you asking for? All of the answers? Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.
Desmond just said, obviously, this episode is called Just the Tip, for sure.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.